Blog Talk Radio.
Remember, good morning, everyone. Good afternoon and good evening. Just remember the warbly 1924 tract of Louis Armstrong morphed into the melodies of the heart and mind, as we know. It's just the best part of welcoming you back to Masonic Effects. Thank you so very much, especially for the brethren in Poland that have joined the audience, and again a shout out to people in Norway and Denmark that have discovered us, and of course to the stalwarts here in North America, particularly brethren in the United States. And of course, the True North, strong and free. Hello, everybody. It's a somber day for me in a way, but not somber like old men get. I mean that in the kindest kind of a way. You know, in general, if you pull back that when we were young, and when we were around young people, we don't want them dreadfully serious. We don't need them caught up. We need them a bit serious periodically to show that they have a bit of intelligence. We want that, to be able to reason things through and have those aha moments for themselves where they're discovering things about themselves, the nature of humanity, an understanding. They're coming to grips with meaning. No, I don't. I mean that you need to do that in small bites, because of that surge of energy and that sense of just being completely indestructible when you're young. You know, just the adventure is right in front of you. This is somewhere on the balance point between what gloriously happens to a lot of us as we get a little older and reflective and have time to realize how contemplative, the rewards of being contemplative. We also begin to appreciate and value that joie de vivre, that absolute joy. We begin to have pleasure from the joy and of the younger men and younger Masons around us, for its own sake. It may be a reminder, it may be just a catalyst for us, a way of reconnecting with the energy, with the pulse of the universe. Yeah, we're part of that, but you know, I'm in the autumn of my life. I'm very quickly heading toward the winter of my life, and I look forward to those experiences as well, where I fall into that sleep where I just don't, either I can't be sure if it's that I don't want to wake up, or I can't wake up. That's coming forward, but in the meantime, I want to see the pace. I love the energy around, and those balance points aren't lost inside of the creative elements of Masonry. Today we have a remarkable commentary. What is the most powerful book in a library? This is though bracketed and framed by a very somber somber for me as a Canadian. What are we, ninth, I don't know how many generations, since 1798. How many generations would that be? Gosh, I should know. I've been here from Scotland. Today, we are remembering things that happened in battle. I don't think that any person wants to be on the battlefield killing somebody else or having somebody killing them. I think they're motivated by more noble principles. They need to defend something that is a belief, a way of life, the protection of people like me. Our soldiers are armed and equip themselves and stand and volunteer for our armed forces with a strong conviction. And those are people that that all too, I don't like to treat my world as if it's a cemetery. I don't think that's the whole point. And I don't want them or anybody, I would never want them or anybody else to live in the past. As the ancient Egyptians explained to us, brethren, ancient Egyptians believed in an infinitive past, a history that went to infinity, and also a future that went to infinity. And think of it like an X. And in the middle, at the point, the apex, was the now, the moment. That's where we live. That's all. That the history and the future exist in our imagination. That's not harsh. It's an observation. And you and I, right here, right now, that's the only part of existence. Oh, well, okay, the physicists are looking for other dimensions. Okay, so we have what, nine? All right, you may live in the imagination. Our imaginations, I'm not saying that as a pejorative. The imagination is like, what would the world be like if there was no art, if there was no poetry to talk to me about the soul of existence? What would the world be like if there was no painter willing to challenge me on canvas, to challenge me to understand or to be able to describe an emotion and a scene and a thought and a story in a way that I can observe from different perspectives, including my own, with the hope that my own will grow. All I need to say is Vimy Ridge. It connects me. Remember, be gentle with us. Our country here, where I am, is very, very young. We don't have the depth of history, as do our brethren in Poland and Norway and Britain and Egypt and China and Japan. We're young. And with that, we're audacious. The older nations, like older men, are contemplative. They will know things that we will eventually know. We're not ridiculous. But with time, our history is remarkable in and of itself, but it's narrow. We hand the stories back and forth repeatedly because we haven't been around long enough to accumulate stories. Not centuries upon centuries upon centuries. Our history is unfolding in front of us. When we look in the rearview mirror of life in this country, we see Ypres and Vimy. We see stories about our second generation, first generation, third generation relatives that did battle. First World War, yeah. So I give a sigh today. There was a battle. It was going on between the 9th of April and the 12th of April in 1917. And the first significant victory, I guess, was by Canadian troops. The Allied troops had been battling very, very hard, but the breakthrough came, was made by Canadians. I'm pretty sure some of those soldiers fell on the battlefield, still conscious, hearing the vibration, feeling the vibrations and hearing the noise and smelling the earth as their nose sunk into it. And whether it was, there was darkness around them or light or it was murky, it was stormy. The storms behind them. And the German troops were facing that sleet and mess. And I wonder about the one man and all of that as he was, as life was seeping out of him, found some degree of calmness and remembered his, the things important to him, his parents, his family, maybe his girl, maybe his boy, and made peace with himself in all of that violence. That's what Vimy is. I don't think there were politicians running around talking about it, or I don't like that because I can never be sure. I don't trust them enough to know whether they're sincere or just there to grab a vote. I'm sorry, that's me. All about this Nord-Pas-de-Calais region of France. Nord-Pas. We had four divisions there against three divisions of the German 6th Army. It was a British-led battle. You know, at least the commanders were British. I want to ask today why so many boys died in that battle. I don't want to know about the competence or incompetence of generals. I have to think that none of them died in vain because of some pompous ass not knowing anything about the contemporary battle. But we hear about the sacrifice. And we need to underscore that the sacrifice was necessary and pivotal because that helps us live with it. And it doesn't aggrandize, but it honors the lives that were sacrificed. It was pivotal, and in some way, right now, our historians are saying it was a battle that defined our nation. I like to think that Canada came about, well, it did come about because of some unusual history, unique history, and unique relationships. But as a coming together, if it must be at the Battle of Vimy Ridge, well, so be it. Hear, hear. Jeez. French suffered 150 casualties in their attempt to control Vimy. Imagine. This is their land, eh? There was only 170,000 of 97,000 Canadians there, a little over 97,184. Anyway, that's in the background here and in the foreground sometimes, but not ever lost. So if you don't see me walking down the street wearing black every day, and you don't see me walking through cemeteries frequently, don't ever assume that I don't appreciate what these men and women were fighting for on both sides, on all sides. They're fighting for purpose. Hear, hear. Big sigh. That's how the world sighs, I think, when the sound of the battles are done. So I have to have a shout out here to our brethren in Sweden. Very sorry to hear about the damage that was done with somebody driving a stolen vehicle into innocent people. I'm also sorry for our brethren in Russia. Yeah, that we're aware over here, although a lot of the news is suppressed, we're aware of the explosions. It's terrible. I'm very sorry to hear that. A great, noble, and very proud people. In Syria. If there are brethren in Syria, all we can do is express our moral support and figure out how to connect. Stay safe. Try to find a way to come here. If we're safe, I think there's efforts being made right now. Some of them I don't always agree with. Try and end the carnage. Here, we're just Freemasons. We're just men striving to live according to a higher standard. Here, Joseph Fort Newton said it like this. The secret of Masonry, like the secret of life, can be known only by those who seek it. Want the secret? Serve it and live it. It cannot be uttered. It's like the ineffable name, huh? It cannot be uttered. It can only be felt and acted. It is, in fact, an open secret. And each man knows it according to his quest and capacity. Knows it according to his quest and capacity. So this Newton is telling us that when we look around, we're seeing things that as they are. We're seeing men who are not on their quest, and we're seeing men who have limited capacity. They're honorable men in their own right. So to search for the open secret, like all things worth knowing, no one can know it for another, and no man can know it alone. Now he gives us pause. Remember, don't take my word for it. Winston Churchill gave you the caution about the likes of me. A great lesson in life is to know that even fools are right sometimes. Here. Sink back in your chair. Tip a drop or two down your throat. Relax. Here's a little McCoy Tyner, pianist from Philadelphia. The international music, huh? It's called Wave. Be right back.
Black Mac Pod, a lightly structured and emotional film watch, and is both a record.
Not to like. What is absolutely not to like? You'll just to round this out as we get into our commentary for today. I want to reflect on the work of Percy Shelley, one of the more interesting poets from the Romantic period. Really didn't gain much. Became sort of infamous in his lifetime, but didn't really develop a following until after his death. Some of you may not be aware or remember from your school days that there was quite a controversy about him. Particularly, one of his poems alienated him from his family, or his family became alienated as a result of the poems, and certainly the public reacted. It was called the necessity of atheism. It led to the analysis from the armchairs, in debate, was he truly an atheist? Anyway, here I'll read to you just a piece to lead into to our commentary today. This is from his work, Ozymandias. And I think he's talking to us, but in an odd language. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frowned and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read, which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed them. And on the pedestal these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, in despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. Curious man that Percy. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Who was the traveler? Here. I have a question. Question to all of you as usual. The think tank out there, my guide and directors. I've been thinking, because of my age, I get to do that. I get to wonder about the important things of committing to a lifestyle, to a search, trying to stretch. Do I believe that capacity of a man is finite? Neither do I believe it's infinite, but you know, I wonder sometimes if I apply myself, would I actually begin to think that I have more, realize that I have more capacity than I may have imagined when I'm in one of those truly honest and reflective moments. And I don't mean to speak poorly of some pompous arse that wants to impress upon me his knowledge or as my grandfather, very worshipful brother, Cyril Toombs, taught me, there's some men that just love to hear themselves talk. And it became validating when I realized that you could have infinite patience for somebody that just loves the sound of their own voice. If you realize that this is doing exactly that, they're not talking with us, they're not sharing ideas, it's not a dialogue. They're just there to reinvent themselves, to demonstrate how self-important they are because they're telling themselves they are. And that ambition has no cost. There's the price of ambition and accomplishment validates everything. I just wish it just sounds so inauthentic after a while. So, Grandpa, thank you for that one. I was, oh man, how old is that? When I learned that, 9 or 10 years old. Sometimes Masons teach little boys some really remarkable lessons that you have to be an old Mason for years to discover that the lessons were all Masonic principles. Love that, man. Here, what is the most powerful book in a library? Go to the door of a library. I think you're at the door of Masonry, everything included behind the doors of that lodge. Now, I'm not talking about the sort of meager, worn-out church basements that we have across the country. We're new. Give us 500 years. We'll have magnificent locations. We will. I guarantee that. We will, because our history is just enriching. You look at the talent that are coming to this country. It's amazing from all points of the earth. It's just an amazing process. Think tank, of course. Culture is blending. Yeah. Dominance. Don't be so shy about your history. You're not going to be lost. Your predominance is your courage. Yes, of course, we can. You know, these folks, we recreated this kind of environment, the safety, this predictability for a reason. It works. It's great. And we're smart. We're clever. We're going to be pointing guns at each other and running around claiming that makes us free. Like, really? Really? Need that for some other people, some other dangerous types to do. Nah, Mason, you're standing there. And it made me think, how do I break this down into something that my little brain can understand? So I thought of walking into a library. What's the closest thing to a parallel to Masonry that I could think of at the time? And it was a library. Let's say it's one of the one of the greatest libraries in the history of mankind. I know I'm exaggerating here a bit. But think of it that way. And think about all of the stacks. Do you remember walking through the stacks? One of the joys is walking to getting your number and going to find your book, but on the way being distracted by some volume that had a curious title and stopping and picking it off the shelf and beginning to read it, thumb through it, and end up going to get the book that you intended to get, but also having that impulsive thing, that package of information held close to your grip. How does that happen? Well, you know, some titles just, you know, beg opening. Is the history section more important than the sciences? Or the volumes filed in business more important than the depths of the humanities? Really? Odd thoughts, isn't it? To put it that way. That would be like ideologues who feel the need to make science support their political goals. And about as effective. Masonic effects is about influence through opportunity. Based on a belief that a forge melts raw components into something new, Freemasonry is then a social and intellectual melting pot. I'm not for a moment suggesting Masonic lodges we grow under the tutelage of art curators or a choreographer. I'm not. I want that, but When it comes to discourse, one could argue lodges feast on a sparse diet, frequently served. But why? The answer may be something familiar to all, but a bittersweet serving. Long ago, we began praising one another, confusing this with encouragement. Confusing this with encouragement after decades, we are harvesting the outcome. Too often, I fear, great and deep ideas are taught by very weak teachers. We don't seem to have realized that we have curbed our Masonic ambitions of stillness and insight and settled to the horror of bright minds for good enough. Do you know of an impended order that is not trying to redefine itself? Setting our judges loose on the matter, we redefine the dilemma from awareness to confrontation. Luddites comfortably ensconced on the deck while the fleet sails on. There is no benefit to imposing change. It is happening around us all the time. We neither hasten or slow the pace. Whether we embrace change and savor it, how separate contemplative Masons have managed to keep alive the principles and philosophy of our craft. That's how it's done. At initiation, we enter a forge that reordered us molecularly. As our eyes open, what did you see? Most powerful book in the library. You answer, you tell me. MasonFX@gmail.com. You tell me. Is it the book that you need at that moment? Is it something that opens your mind? What's the most powerful book? Powerful book. And what if you're wrong? What if the most powerful book is a fluid decision? And it changes every day, every moment, every second. And that each in their own way contributes ideas and thought, whether large or small, as we have often heard. So, is there a main thrust to Masonry? Is it philanthropy? Is it philosophy? Is it the state of being? Well, I do like Joseph Fort Newton's approach to this. It's like the secret of life, the secret of Masonry. You know it. These are the true Masons. This is the coming of true Masons, or the greening of true Masons, as I like to think, being a product of the 70s and 60s. You seek it, you serve it, and you live it. It's humbling. I was looking around the estate here the other day and thinking, you know, I should be putting more money into this and that, but instead I've sort of gone with comfortable and sensible. It serves our needs. But the open secret around is, I think, to be satisfied with what we have, but not settle. Not to be praising myself, but to be encouraging myself. Because if I'm lulled into the effects of constant praise is saying, great, good enough, wonderful, amazing, magical, with substandard work, it's misguided. It's not true. Even stupid students, even stupid apprentices will know that at some level. Oh, well, we don't want to embarrass. Yeah, we do. We want to help that man so he overcomes his embarrassment, so he realizes that if he digs a little harder, your preparation paid off. We could see exactly the product of your preparation. I can see that your lodge is a work in progress and it has these goals well in hand. Congratulations. It sounds altogether different than did a remarkable job, did a hell of a job, did a great job, and the work was substandard. Well, if you're my apprentice and you're there to learn from me to become the best, then substandard isn't, it may be a way stop on the journey, but it's not the end goal. I appreciate the effort that went into this. I see how you're developing your skills. You and I should talk about specific exercises or practices that I think might help if you're interested. If you're interested is a way of saying, are you a seeker? Do you want this? Do you think I have, as the master, I have something to offer you as the apprentice? We have, or do I want the person to arrive at full stop? I can't do anything about a person's being discouraged, except I know that being honest with a person is the finest way to present yourself as an authentic, caring person in their presence. The discouragement, when we lose perspective, we can become easily discouraged. When we feel, when the chatter in our own mind is saying to us, you can't do it, you can't do it, give up, you can't do it. Well, we're not going to get into lying on the therapist's couch to figure out where that came from, unless you need to do that, go and do it. But it's like discouragement is necessary, and it's an artifact of any kind of pursuit. The question is, what do you do when you become discouraged? Not, oh, gee, I'm discouraged. Oh, gee, I'm discouraged, so that means I'm settling. This is as far as I can go. What if you have the hands of Brahms? What if you have the magic of Fritz Kreisler with the violin? What if that? And what if your teachers said, you're amazing early on in your career. You're just, that's fabulous. Come and look at little Fritz. It's just incredible. Well, it's only a small portion of the raw talent, the undeveloped talent. What if our praise encouraged Fritz to settle? Oh, we could be that, you know, that protege. But driven by a father that saw, what was the motive? Was it stability for the family? Was it developing at some level the honest appreciation of supreme musical ability and recognizing that at the early age? Well, who but a musician would have recognized musical potential? And then the discipline and teaching the discipline to encourage a self-discipline that went on to be genius. Well, to be exceptional in our field, to be exceptional, not to be good. To be exceptional requires 10,000 hours. Exceptional. 10,000 hours of practice. Are you thinking that everybody around that accomplishes anything is there because they're lucky? Grow up. It's hard work. And part of that work is being able to face down the discouragement and realize that that's your strength. That people that quit early don't accomplish very much. It's that stay at it attitude. This masonry is, of anything else, for me, the important and powerful book in the library is always there. But then there's another powerful book in the library. We're an audacious lot. We don't know how to give up. We don't know how to quit. sitting around trying to come up with clever ideas is an evening for fools. When bright people are put to work, they'll come up with creative solutions and they'll notice things. We don't create that. We don't create that intelligence. We don't create genius. That's a matter of self-discovery, isn't it? But the opportunity, I think truly in my heart that Masonry owes a debt to every initiate to fulfill the opportunity to educate and train. And part of that is this type of conversation. Long ago, the idea of the privacy of these ideas changed. Oh, we still have so much about Masonry that is personal. Some loutish types walk around declaring whether we don't have secrets or we do have secrets. Excuse me, it's personal. It's like asking me personal questions about my relationship with my friends and my wife. It's none of your business. Well, do you consider that a secret then? So be it. Still none of your business. You mock us because of that? Okay. None of your business. I'm not going to make up some schoolboy story to satisfy your interests. What, do you have a sick little prurient imagination? Well, that's your problem. That's not mine. Just in the world around us, there's a potential for authenticity, genuine conversation. You're all part of that. Here, just before we get into the next tune, check this one out. I think this is kind of interesting. This is from Al Pike, our buddy Al. You know, you got to imagine how amazing would have been to be in his company. He liked music and he liked poetry and he liked stories and he liked a good drink. He liked to dance. He was bright as hell, eh? Well read. Oh well, we want to throw mud on that fellow, don't we? Toleration, he said, holding that every other man has the same right to his opinion and faith that we have to ours, and liberality, holding that as no human being can with certainty say in the clash and conflict of hostile faiths and creeds what is truth, or that he is surely in possession of it. So everyone should feel that it is quite possible that another equally honest and sincere with himself, and yet holding the contrary opinion, may himself be in possession of the truth. Damn that, Al, eh? Damn you, Al. Thank you.
You need a website. Why not do it yourself? With Wix, you can create your own professional website. Choose from hundreds of templates. Whether you're a small business owner or an artist, we've got something for you. Just drag and drop to create your site exactly the way.
Here. We have some opportunity ahead of us. But the truths may not be ours. As Al says, we approximate those truths, don't we? We approximate them with some degree of frequency. Here, let me round this out today, just because we're in a kind of a somber frame of mind. We Masons are among the fortunate ones who are taught to meet together with others opposing or competitive ideas and yet respect each other as brothers. It's anonymous. I think that's one that we can strive for. How do we introduce our apprentices at the door so that they're aware? How do we orient them? And I think we do catch as catch can with this. I don't think we're really quite fair to ourselves. As G. Wilbur Best, this is from the Southern California Research Lodge. Freemasonry has endured not because of its antiquity, its influence, or its social standing, but because there have been so many who have lived it. The effectiveness of Masonic teachings will always be the measure by which the outside world judges Freemasonry. So do they make a difference here? The proof of Freemasonry is in our deeds. And it is in our deeds that Freemasonry is made known to non-Masons. The only way that the craft can be judged is by its product. The prestige of Freemasonry lies squarely on the shoulders of each of us. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. We don't become any better or different because we wear the robes, you have the jewels, or go through the ceremony. It's the product. And you remember those notions that we've taken you in, and we hope we haven't wasted, you know, the opportunity on you. We hope that you produce, but you produce at your own level, in your own way. And now, you know, I'm speaking about myself here when I'm talking about seeing people that are a bit hypocritical or wasteful of the opportunity. That's their business. That's absolutely their business. And the truth is, I don't know if they are what they're up to or what they're doing or whether they achieve a Masonic presence and whether their deeds helped to define us in a more noble way. I truly don't. Maybe that's the test of the fools like me. Here, we're going to wrap up today. This is until it's time for you to go. I'm sort of reminiscent of the attitudes of what was going on when we were saying goodbye to our brothers and sons and daughters. And we can almost hear the guns echoing across the ocean. Trepai notre, until it's time for you to go. This is Emily Claire Barlow. Pas de nous, je suis une femme, ta femme à toi. Et cet amour qui voit le jour entre nos bras restera nôtre jusqu'au jour où tout partira. Tu viens d'ailleurs, je suis jeudi, tu es dimanche. J'aime les bleus. La pluie et la nuit blanche, tu m'es venue d'ailleurs.
t'attendais plus. Étais-moi jusqu'au jour où tu partiras.
Look at that song. Till it's time for you to go. This isn't a dress rehearsal. Life is the real thing. You feel you need to be a silly bugger and go through life with a chip on your shoulder? Have at it. But there's opportunities for satisfaction and deeper understanding. Make sense out of it. Make sense out of the unsensible, insensitive. If we pose the question and we never stop until we find the answer, it doesn't mean we'll necessarily find answers for every question that we have. Let's be honest about that. But it means, I think, that we're a hell of a lot more interesting in the meantime. It's been kind of interesting today, I think, you'll admit. Not too down in the dumps about what's going on, but a celebration of the results. Let's celebrate the results of all the efforts that's been going on around us, and particularly your efforts, your striving, your personal effort. You don't have to declare that to the world. Your acts and your deeds and your behavior tell more about your nature than anything else you could possibly say or think. Be kind to yourself. Here. I look forward to being with you again soon. Thanks for all the advice. Couldn't do it without you. You were all part of that big lodge where we're all bloody geniuses and we're so thoughtful. It makes grown men weep and women faint. Yeah. See you next time.
Tes yeux qui font baisser les miens. Un rire.
Zed. Jazz singer discovered wild in Europe. She goes by the name Zaz. Check it out.
Parle tout bas, je vois la vie.
Smooth editing there. Jeez.
Thank you.
va? J'habite un coin du vieux Montmartre. Mon père rentre chaud tous les soirs. Et pour nous, on est tous les quatre. Ma pauvre mère travaille au lavoir. Quand je suis malade, je reste à ma fenêtre. Je regarde passer les gens d'ailleurs. Quand le jour vient à disparaître, il y a des choses qui me font un peu peur. Dans ma rue, il y a des gens qui se promènent. Les enfants, je suis chaussée et dans la nuit.
It's a good day to be a Mason, brother.
Quand je
see you again.
Versé par une rengaine, je suis soudain. En ma rue, il y a des ombres qui se promènent.
Thank you.
rhythm.